In section six, numbers 191 and 2, while overall we prefer this language somewhat to the bill that passed, the bill that passed satisfactorily establishes the same intent. So it seems that those sections in section six are probably unnecessary, 1 and 2. In other words, it would really effectively be all of section six. Probably can be deleted from this bill.
What was the number of that?
I'm sorry, I didn't have...
Did it actually deal with the...
Adoption assistance.
2015-190?
Yes, yes.
The
and it's, the 77 supplements have it in it, 15-190. Yes. To the degree that it seems this section could simply be deleted. Is that in the department's position paper? I thought perhaps it might be.
Okay, but right now, the bill that was passed last year, which was Senate Bill 54, Section 190 now reads, adoption assistance. A hard-to-place child in the permanent custody of the department in a foster home for not less than 1 year may not be denied the opportunity for a permanent home if the achievement of this depends on continued subsidy by the state.
And the bill before you sets out more clearly the purpose of adoption assistance. But the remainder of the bill that passed last year does, in its definition section, speak adequately to number one here on page 3. The definition section does define a hard-to-place child and does, for the most part, take under, or you know, already define the same conditions of hard-to-place. So that's acceptable.
As you read that, it said something about a child who's been in a foster home for not less than a year. Do you have problems with that?
Generally, we did. Our concern is, of course, that it limits a child who has not been in a foster home for 1 year for being considered for a subsidized adoption.
Right.
As I recall, and perhaps Mr. Holmberg can speak to the same issue, as I recall, the testimony on the bill last year was that within that year in foster care, though, the department would be seeking an adoptive home for that child without a subsidy. So that seems reasonable.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 54 also amended Section 200 and
yes.
210.
Yes. And I was coming to both of
oh,
those.
Okay.
Yeah, Section 7 in the bill before you on page 4 can also be deleted. But not Section 8. The Children's Code Task Force particularly believes strongly in Section 8, as I recall, since the task force felt strongly that the availability of such children should be made known to the state, to encourage people to come forward and take those children, since now there would be a subsidy available to do so.
Well, already. Are you happy with the language that was passed last year, that amended 205?
As I recall, 205 was not in that bill.
Okay.
I don't think so. This Section 8 on information, dissemination of information, I could be wrong, but I didn't have a copy of the bill.
Okay,
but
you're right, it's 210.
Mm-hmm. That was my recollection. It didn't speak to information at all. So we would recommend that Section 8 stay in. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Okay. On Section 9, we prefer the language in the bill before you to what passed last year. The reason being because the bill that passed last year permits the amount of subsidy to be at the discretion of the department. The word is used in last year's bill at the discretion of the department. And it is our feeling that it would be preferable to have regulations, which is provided in the bill before you. The other thing that Section 9 of the bill before you does is in the last three lines, lines 26, 7, 8, and 9, established very clearly that adoption assistance cannot be considered as resources for purposes of aid to families with dependent children or other forms of public assistance. And we believe that that section should be in the bill. So our preference is to keep Section 9. We prefer it to what was passed last year.
Yeah, what you're saying is that the subsidies should not make the families ineligible for AFDC. What is your reason for that?
The subsidy is paid usually to assure that the adopted family is enabled to meet the special needs of this child they have adopted. That's the reason why the subsidy is attached to the hard-to-place child. For instance, there is some reason why that child has not been adoptable and why he needs the subsidy to encourage his adoption. And we want to make sure that the subsidy then is available to meet the needs of that child, be they medical or emotional, and not considered as resources to the whole family for purposes of public assistance. So those two things we think are an improvement over last year's bill. As I indicated, probably Section 11 we think should come first if that's possible. Now, Section 12, before I just speak generally to the section, we wish to make the committee aware that what is being done by Section 12 is separating the voluntary relinquishment statute from the adoption statute in the state. At the present time, the only relinquishment statute which exists is in connection with the adoption statute. It is the belief of our membership and also the position of the Child Welfare League of America that those two should be separate legal actions, clearly separate legal actions, primarily to ensure that the child who may not be adoptable still can be relinquished if that is in his best interest, so that relinquishment is not tied to his adoptability. So this section will do that. It will establish a separate relinquishment statute. The entire wording on Section 5 is acceptable to us, and really was the wording drafted by the Children's Court Task Force. On page 6, however, in approximately line 3 or 4, I don't know quite what the best place to put it would be, we would suggest the addition of wording which also includes that the legal custody in line 3, where it says in legal custody of the child be transferred to the Department of Health and Social Services, a licensed child placing agency, or a willing and able relative. We would suggest that that also clearly state that such legal custody carries with it the right to consent to the child's adoption. So there is absolutely no question. But that parental rights have been terminated, the legal custody of the child given clearly to someone else, and that someone else, be it the department or a relative, can then consent to that child's adoption. And that wording seems to us to be missing. Okay. Then the only other section which generated lots of discussion in the informal meeting which we held last week, and also which generated some original discussion between the time the Children's Code Task Force adjourned and the committee took up this bill last year, is Section B on the bottom of page 6. It's the last section of the bill. I think it's probably most descriptive to say that there's a good deal of confusion about this section. Not necessarily disagreement, just really confusion. The section, as we understand, was added to the bill in order to sort of legalize a rather common practice, or to be sure that common practice is legalized, and that is that in many instances a relinquishing parent does not go directly to the court. They go to the Department of Health and Social Services or a private agency and state their wish to relinquish their child, to give up their child for adoption. And that's fine. I don't think anyone has any trouble with that. The the difficulty and the confusion comes because in line 23, we're all very unclear as to the definition for a written instrument. Is a written instrument a petition? If so, it needs to be followed subsequently by a court order. If it is an order, then a couple of people were rather concerned that the Department of Health and Social Services or Catholic Social Services are in the business of issuing court orders. We're just not entirely comfortable with how written instrument would be defined. Now, we considered and tossed around several possible ways to achieve what this section wants to achieve, and which I think people are clearly in support of. And that is that agencies believe that if a parent wants to relinquish, they should not absolutely, unequivocally be forced into court in order to do that. But that they should be able to voluntarily state with full understanding their wish to relinquish, and that an agency can act in that case as an agent of the court to take that expression of a natural parent's wishes. However, the concern is with whether or not this written instrument then actually does terminate the parental rights. If it does not, or if there is some question about whether or not it does, then it occurred to us we may be in the same boat that we're in with a consent that doesn't clearly terminate the parental rights. In either case, we were concerned about the child being left in limbo. Therefore, and I'm certainly not able to say that everybody was in total agreement with this, but it occurred to us that perhaps it would be worth considering, at least, an additional section, a section C, which stated something to the effect that this written instrument could then be transmitted to the court for the issuance of an order which terminates parental rights and responsibilities and does these other things, you know, give the right to consent to adoption and those sorts of things. For instance, someone in the group mentioned the fact that in many cases, magistrates hear children's matters, but they do not issue an order. They simply transmit their findings to the court, and based upon their recommendation, then the court issues an order. It seemed to us that perhaps the same sort of methodology could be used in this particular case. Catholic Social Services in Anchorage, of course, hated to have to do any more business with the court than was absolutely necessary, and I could certainly agree with that. On the other hand, we believe that the statute has to very clearly establish that the natural parent's rights to this child have been terminated before anything else is done with the child. And we have some concern that Section B maybe doesn't really do that.
Well, what's the present law? The only way you can do it is through a court order?
I looked at the present. The present law does not have anything that speaks to this Section B at all. So in essence, what my understanding would be you do under the present law is you either use the consent, this consent thing, or you relinquish. But you see, under the present law as well, you're only relinquishing if there's an adoption petition. So in essence, it doesn't quite get at all of the issues anyway. So we're just not really, the more we talked about it, we didn't have a clear position on this particular section of the bill. It would just be spoken to in our position that states we want to ensure that the child rights are protected.
That's right.
Pudge, on that section, is it correct to say that you do think that an alternative to a court order should be available? And some of the group that you spent some time with thinks that should only be preliminary to a court order. In other words, it would save the person going to court to get it themselves, but that a court order really would clarify things more.
The Child Welfare League of America had an interesting observation as we did our research with that, and they state that there are some states that do this, and it's not too long. If the committee likes, I can read you a couple of paragraphs that speak to that. And it's giving you a similar example to what is here. Statutory provision for relinquishment of children to authorized social agencies presupposes that necessary protections are assured by the services offered by such agencies. by casework which gives the parents every opportunity to consider alternatives and to reach a decision right for them, or in the best interest of their child, and by accepting these relinquishments only when parents are ready to give up their rights forever and recognize this as a final decision. Agencies acting under these statutory procedures and without the protection afforded by court approval should, however, be fully aware that the adoption proceedings may be attacked by the natural parent or parents for alleged fraud, duress, coercion in the procurement of the relinquishment, unless such attack is barred by the statute of limitations. And even when it is unfounded, such attacks may seriously damage the adoption proceedings. Termination of parental rights should, as a rule, be the result of recommendation, by a qualified social agency. It is presumed that only through professional casework can there be adequate determination of the desirability of terminating parental rights. And then it goes on later to say that the termination should be by a court order. So we did look to see if there were other states that did it in this way, and apparently there are. But the Child Welfare League recommends that in those cases there be an order that keeps everything clear.
If such a procedure were, you know, if we rewrote this and clarified some of the issues that you're concerned with, would you see that the moment at which a parent signs the relinquishment is the moment that it goes into effect, or would you see that it would be the moment that the court issues the order pursuant to that relinquishment?
The attorneys are, I believe it has to be when the order is issued. However, I wondered if an order could be retroactive to the date of signing. I mean, or given the 10 days allowed to withdraw.
I suppose it could be either way, whichever way seems desirable, but if it's going to not be effective until the date when the court issues the order, what is the purpose then of having this? Is it just to save parents having to go to court? That's the only reason, really.
That's the way it was explained.
It's not to save time. It's not to allow anything to happen to the child before the court order is issued. It's only to save the trouble of the parents to go to court. I'm just asking this because if we do rewrite it, I need to know those things in order to write it right.
And many states, though, do insist that it's a court activity. Period.
Any further questions?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance to read your position paper yet, but I'm assuming that you covered it all.
Well, it's just a philosophical statement.
I don't know whether you have a copy of the memo that we have from Bob on the Catholic Social Services position. What is it?
She doesn't have a copy.
He's just handed us a memo, and it refers on page 3. I just wanted to know what your response to that concerning lines 7 and 8. Where we delete notice by publication may not be given. But the memo, Bob, seems to indicate, it says they're objecting to the deletion against of notice. Oh, I see. Okay, they're objecting to the deletion. And what they're saying is that notice by publication should not be given. Right?
They don't want notice publication.
What is your response to that, or do you?
I'd be in agreement.
You agree with that?
Yeah.
I think you said Mr. Kirkman fight that he wants to delete the whole section, but to bring it back to the language that he takes care of.
Yeah.
And that's what he's speaking to here. He had brought this up in the meeting that we had last week and cited this Supreme Court case.
There wasn't any mention of the case.
And since this was all of the notice, the civil procedure notices and whatnot are not something that I'm really very clear on. I defer to what the attorney's recommendation would be on that section.
I think we had quite some testimonies on that item last. Okay, thank you for your testimony. Holman?
I'm Art Holmberg with the Division of Social Services. And I think the division is pretty much in agreement with what NASW and Ms. Pinecroft presented. I see no real problem, but the last discussion about adding a possible section C. I don't know, that kind of drops a bomb on me. If I had my druthers, I'd like to go with it just as it is. And I probably don't see that many problems with it, but I would better leave it that part as is. There is a real problem with that, about taking a relinquishment and then having to get the court order on top of that. With regard to adoptions, even now, you know, we're talking to the Attorney General's office about, now we get a relinquishment, we go to court and get termination, and we have only vote for adoption. And, you know, we're beginning to think, you know, why get the relinquishment and then go get a termination? And then later on you have an adoption, which cancels out all that parental right. Anyway, you're going to court twice, in other words. But then you bring up the point about kids that don't go into adoption, and they do kind of remain out in limbo. As a social worker, I just can stay out of court on that relinquishment, too. You get the relinquishment, you've worked long time with the relinquishing person to help her make her own decision. She makes that decision, she relinquishes. I don't want to see her dragged into court, and I have seen that when I get the relinquishment, and the judge says, I want to see this young lady, and I want her here in court. And that's a terribly traumatic experience, and if we can avoid that, I would like to go with the language here. But at the same time, I don't want to get in a position where it backfires on us. So perhaps we could have some more advice from the Supreme Court. That'd be even worse, but thanks. As for the rest, I agree with what Kushner said. There's one section here where it talks about eligibility. You see on page 4. At the bottom, that's all well and good, but the last statute, 47.25.790-97, is all about aid to disabled. It has nothing to do with aid to disabled.
Yeah, there's 810. I think it goes through all the public assistance.
What line is that on?
I think that's just AD. Looks like.
Starts from 27.
That's the wrong citation.
I think it is. I think from 790 to 970 is all aid to disabled.
There's 47.25.8,
Mr. Chairman.
That's very simple.
It was
meant to cover
all of the
woods.
Just
check that
out.
Yeah, you may have the wrong section, it looks like.
Okay. Thank
you for the one other thing we have is on front page. You can come to the classroom, you pretty well support this. But maybe just a change in language on line now. How consent is executed. After the consent which does not name or otherwise identify the adopted. Oh, well, we're going to change that anyway.
Okay.
And there should be, when you come to the point where you say someone authorized to take acknowledgments, maybe that should be defined a little bit better. And that's what this position paper has on it. Duly authorized officials of adoption place an agency's license under 4735-100. No big thing, but I think it might define that a little better. And I'm pretty satisfied with deleting those sections and standing with the on subsidy adoptions that went into law this last year, Senate Bill 54. I think that does a pretty good job.
May I ask you the same question I asked Pudge about the language that we passed last year referred to children who've been in foster homes at least a year. That seems just on the face of it to me to be a block to finding homes earlier for those children, but Pudge explained that there may not be a problem with that, is that correct?
No.
When that's subsidized adoption?
No, I don't see any problem with that.
Why not?
Because you're working to find adopted homes.
Does it always take a year?
No. I think, you know, what you might find is a child that's been in foster care for a while, maybe out in the bush, and it's been in foster care for maybe quite some time, and the only hang up in the past has been that family would like to adopt that child. There's no way they can afford it financially without help. And so our subsidized adoption, you know, will pick up a lot of those people, and the kids have been. As far as the kid that first comes in, is available.
You're talking then about a family that would be in a foster home that wanted to adopt a child. They would receive payment as foster parents, wouldn't they, until the point when they adopted the child, and then they'd get the subsidy, which would be a better deal for them. I mean, financially, just being a cold hard financial impact. Be better for them to stay as foster parents, or?
Well, I think that's kind of one of the purposes of this, is to make it possible for them to continue. It can go up to the amount of foster care. There's one thing that you did add, you had in here, I don't think it's in the other. It is up to, it's and benefits, you've got a line, and that's probably be pretty good to put in there. It's on page 4. May not exceed the existing rate and benefits.
What line is that?
24.
That's
24.
We want that whole section.
This whole section?
This whole section.
Yes.
Oh, that's 9, okay. Yeah.
They deleted section 7. They're suggesting to delete section 7 and section
6.
4.
Oh,
6
and
7. Okay. And the lead line here, yeah,
great. 9 was one of the ones that was amended last year.
Okay.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Holbrook.
For purposes of the record, my name is Patty Burke, and I'm here on behalf of the client for the Alaska Legal Services Corporation. Legal Services has no problems with the way this bill is currently drafted. I am expecting some materials to be sent from Anchorage, and I would like to be able to submit to you any comments, if that would be all right. They should be getting them any day now, so we'll have that on. I've been informed by our Bush attorneys that they would strongly object to changing the language, as Pudge had suggested, on lines 13 and 14 on page 1, with respect to deleting the ability to consent to an adoption doesn't identify the adopting parent or the petitioner in the adoption action. So we agree with the language as it stands and would be objecting to any amendment with respect to that language.
Mr. Chairman?
Pudge, are you going to leave that language with us that you recommend?
As I understood this, Pudge's comments, she was trying to rewrite it to the point where consent forms would only be used by parents, both adoptive and natural parents, who knew who each other were. Is that correct? And what is the objection of the people, the Bush attorneys?
My understanding is that there are some cultural problems with requiring the identity of the adoptive parent to be made known to the natural, for example, the natural father who never given his consent. It wasn't clear to me exactly what the basis of that cultural situation is, and that's the kind of information that I'm waiting to get from some of our Bush attorneys. But that was a problem that they had with it. They had no problem with the way it's written right now. But, for example, in adoptions that I've done, when you're getting the consent of, for example, in this case, it was the natural father, you actually take a consent paper to him, explain to him what's going on, and he signs it. And I think that this speaks to whether or not those papers indicate who the parent is. And I think the way it's currently drafted in the bill as it stands right now, that the person who is giving his consent can request the name of the person who is the adopted parent, but it doesn't necessarily invalidate the consent if it's not put on the consent papers, who exactly is adopting the child. With respect to Pudge's problems concerning the sort of the problem that parents may have with the fact that they sign a consent to have their child adopted, and they may think that that is it, and they have no more responsibilities to that child, And that's only true once the adoption decree is issued by the court. So in other words, once you sign a consent decree, it doesn't terminate your responsibilities. However, with the way that this is drafted, that is pointed out in the consent decree that the person signs. It is pointed out that this doesn't terminate their rights or responsibilities with respect to the child. With respect to the comments also made on page 2, concerning notice to putative fathers and that Supreme Court decision, it's my understanding that notice is still required, but there is a question of consent and that it's on page 2, section 4, where they're talking about line 26. I think it was mentioned that possibly putative fathers do not have to be included in that list, and I don't think that's what the Supreme Court upheld. I think they were talking about consent and not notice. I think they're still definitely entitled to consent. On page 3, with respect to the notice provisions. Pardon?
What's putative father?
That's an illegitimate.
Illegitimate father.
Well, I mean, it's an illegitimate child to a natural parent, as opposed to one who is married to the mother.
That's born, right?
An alleged father.
Is that what it is, punitive?
What my understanding is.
Maybe I have
an
alleged
father.
Well,
no paternity has been established.
But
it's
not proven.
Okay. I thought, with the Supreme Court case, there was a question from that being, well,
punitive means alleged or supposed.
But obviously it's only used in cases where father is not married to the mother, because under the law that's one of the strongest presumptions that you are in fact a father.
Right.
Once you fill out the paternity questionnaire that the Department of Revenue gives out, though, there's no question whatsoever.
And then I think it was also mentioned in the discussion about deleting the notice by publication. I realize that there's been some indication that this should be put back in the legal services has no problem with the way it's written right now. I think that there is a problem between the right of the natural father to due process of law and getting notice, for example, to an adoption, as well as the rights of privacy involved with the various parties. However, I think in this case that probably a due process clause would win out. For that reason, I really don't feel strongly one way or the other about that section. Under Alaska law, what you do is you look at Rule 4 of the court procedure, and if the whereabouts of the parent that you need consent from are unknown, there are processes whereby that can be gotten around in the courtroom situation without having to publish, so there wouldn't be any massive expenses incurred by legal services clients necessarily, because generally those kinds of things can be gotten around. Actually, I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other whether it's put in or kept out. There are some privacy problems, there are also some due process problems, and I think these are the types of things that the Children's Code Task Force battled about over when I was attending some of those meetings.
Well, if all you experts on the adoption don't have any strong feelings one way or the other, then why do we need to have it in here? I mean, why is it being proposed to change? It's existing law, right? And this proposes some amendments to existing law.
I mean, why are they taking out that notice by publication may not be given? Well, I know that some of the discussions in the Children's Code that some judges were requiring notice by publication in some jurisdiction in the state already. You know, I don't know. That doesn't do anything that much to the existing law in terms of it would probably allow some judges to continue to require legitimately publication type notice. But they may have someone strongly arguing for it. And then on page 5, with that one section that Pudge had mentioned on severance of parent and child relationship, I would agree with Pudge. I know when I was reading this over, I thought that was a little misplaced in the statute. So I have no problem with that.
I don't know what, but usually when we tell the drafters how to draft, they don't usually agree with us.
Cool.
You know, they have this rule book that tells them how to do things. I don't know if this is one of those cases, but I mean, they don't just draft and use accidentally. They're supposed to follow this rule book that tells them how to draft. This thing called the Alaska Drafting Manual.
I've seen that. I'll look it up and see if there's a specific thing in there about where that's supposed to go. It seemed misplaced to me. I didn't know why it was in that particular portion.
Any questions? Thank you.